Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Continue on Liberty Conspiracies on Free Talk Live.
I went as a McPizza one time. You remember those?
Oh, yes.
McDonald's had a pizza.
I forgot they used to have those things.
Yeah, it was gross.
They were like that big, weren't they?
Yeah, they still sell them in the Midwest. Yeah.
Do they really?
Yeah, last time.
Wow. I wonder if they're, you know, made from that era and they just have them in cold
storage. Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
They put them in their McDonald's fallout shelters, McShelter.
Yeah, they hydrated it like Marty McFly and
Back
to the Future. Well, you sure can hydrate a pizza.
Yeah. Oh, man. So now over on Rumble, Northern Cardinal says, who hands out pennies? Yeah, I remember sometimes people, any thoughts on Stephen King shooting John Lennon?
Yeah, that's
a says
whole
Hal 9000 Watson.
That's a whole thing, yeah. How many hours do you have, guard?
Really? I've never heard that.
Yeah, it's a weird one, yeah.
All right, we'll have to schedule another time when you can come in. Hal, you tell us, if you want to come on sometime, Hal, you can join us. Well, I'll throw it in the chat thing. You can come in. That'd be awesome. And did you, Chris, when you were a kid, did you ever have to do one of those things where, like, they bring you into a place and you have to put your hand in, like, the brains and
yes.
the jello and all
eyeballs.
That stuff?
It was eyeballs.
Yeah, the eyeballs, oh, you know.
Yeah. Right out of the 80s, yeah. I remember they also would make us bring around UNICEF, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yep. I remember that. That was right. Oh, Harry Hart is in the Rockfin chat. Brian Taylor's there. I had a friend that went as a toilet one year.
Yeah, I knew someone like that. We didn't really talk to him.
Oh, man. Real McCoy says, I was a fairy godmother one year at school. Fun costume. Then Brian DeMcCartney says, Flying Purple Eaters and Love Potion Number 9. Good stuff.
Well,
we're talking
purple people eaters?
Yeah. And there's so many great songs. I remember one year I was a DJ just out of college. I was doing that overnight show, Chris.
Yeah.
FNX,
right? FNX?
Well, it was the one that everybody at FNX liked. It was WSDK, Monadnock Radio, 92.1 FM.
It was in
Peterborough, New Hampshire, there was a great blues bar that was just around the corner.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And, you know, that's where I got to play like Stairway to Heaven backwards at 3 a.m. it was really fun. It was cool.
Did you have Charles Lockwadera call in?
No, didn't have Charles, and we didn't have the Fool's Parade, but that was really funny. I did a takeoff of the Fool's Parade by playing the extended remix of Inagata DeVita for like a half hour. I just made it up. I was like,
it's an hour and a half right there.
Yeah, right? And it was, you know, it was really weird. It really was like being Wolfman Jack in
Yeah, I'm Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, it was like American Graffiti because you're out in the middle of nowhere and it was wild. But for Halloween one year, I got to do this special show. I planned it all out, had to do it live, and everything. I used every possible sound source. We had CD players, two turntables, and a cassette machine, and I went from one to the other with sound clips on the cassette that I had taken from Kolchak, The Night Stalker, Psycho, all these different things. I rented out stuff because at that time you couldn't go digital. I had to go from VHS through the jacks in the back to my tape machine, know the order of stuff. So I would go between tunes playing cuts from horror movies, like all that stuff, right? And they're coming to get you, Barbara.
They're coming.
Yeah. And that was the thing that, like, Audi at Modern Retro Radio,
yeah.
He was like, oh, you got to find that. I was like, I still have it on cassette somewhere. But it was fun. And, you know, all these great songs like Psycho Killer, Those Are People Who Died, It's Too Late to Fall in Love with Sharon Tate, Godzilla.
Who is that by? It's too late to fall in love.
Oh, yeah, that's the Jim Carroll Band. And, of course, he wrote Basketball Diaries and stuff.
And his ex-wife, Rosemary Carroll, ended up becoming Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love's entertainment lawyer. and was married to Danny Goldberg of Gold Mountain, and she's crucial to the Tom Grant, Kurt Cobain murder theory.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Rosemary Carroll. Rosemary Carroll. Yeah, Jim Carroll, his ex.
Isn't that, wow, I didn't know that. And, of course, he came over from Ireland and was, like, almost a professional basketball player of all things. Like, who would have thought an Irish dude would be, like, that good? But
yeah, that's right.
I guess he was pretty darn good, And, yeah, so all those songs, like, I, you know, I really dug around and found so many cool things. Of course, Bauhaus, Bela Lugosi's Dead, and, you know, Scary Monsters by Bowie and stuff like that. And, you know, that sort of stuff. Cat People, the original version, the Charlie Callis, stuff. And, I remember my brother was watching.
Monster Mash.
Yeah, you know, Boris. Yeah, so many, so many good songs. Flying Purple People Eater. Let's check out a little more here. We've got Brian's favorite, The Night Stalker. Yes, the Junkyard episode. We're talking the zombie with Cab Calloway. Well, not Cab Calloway. Scatman Crothers.
Yeah, from The Shining. From The Shining. Yep. Yeah.
And you know who was one of the key writers on Kolchak was the guy who created The Sopranos. What's that dude's name?
David Chase.
Yeah, David Chase. He was one of the that was one of his early things was The Night Stalker. And a lot of people don't know this, but part of the reason that The Night Stalker didn't continue was because Darren McGavin, essentially the whole production staff like fell apart. And it was up to Darren McGavin. He was acting, in many cases, not only acting as the star in the show, but as executive producer for a while. He put his own money into it.
He was like a showrunner.
Yeah, he was the showrunner. And and he was doing script editing and stuff. And he was playing a character who the character was like 10 years younger than he actually was. Like he was in his late 50s playing a guy in his 40s. And he was running around and doing all this. Remember the Paramount Faye one? Paramount Faye's going to get you.
Then he'd later on go to a different holiday kind of theme with a Christmas Story. You know?
Oh, yeah. Boy, I've never seen that. I've only seen clips. It's supposed to be great. I've really got to see it.
I think because Ted Turner replayed it throughout the 90s on TNT and TBS, I think he kind of got this following. It never had that during the first run.
Yeah. And I know they did a sequel last year, I think.
I heard that. Don't bother.
Oh, no, that's too bad. But Kolchak was it. I mean, there was nothing cooler than Kolchak. And even when they were doing the Monster of the Week episodes for that one season that they got after the first two TV movies that Richard Matheson scripted, when they got to do those stories, I think, and especially because David Chase did such a good job. And Chris, I think I mentioned to you that if you watch, as you know, I know you know at least part of this.
Like the X-Files?
Well, so we have the X-Files connection where the episode Jose Chung's from Outer Space, where they brought Charles Nelson Reilly in as the writer, Jose Chung, originally they wanted that to be Darren McGavin's Kolchak, and he was writing a book, and he was going to investigate it and that sort of stuff. But they couldn't do it because the rights to Kolchak were all bound up with Universal TV, and it was a real mess. So they couldn't do it. So they ended up doing that instead with Charles Nelson Reilly, and it just became a classic, you know? So good. So good. And I think I told you, I met the bleep dude, Peter, the guy who played
Vancouver.
His wife.
William B. Davis.
Davis was the smoking man, but the guy who played the bleep man, the cop, is like, I got your bleeping aliens in that episode, Jose Chung.
Oh, yeah.
That was the husband to a woman named Elizabeth who did casting for The Outer Limits. And she and another woman invited me to this film release party thing. And she introduces me to her husband. And she's like, oh, Gardner, I want you to meet Peter. And I'm like, I know the guy. I'm like, do I know you? I'd only been in Vancouver like 2 months. So I was like, Do we know each other? Like, do you live in Burnaby? Like, how do I know? And then he's like, no, I don't think we've ever met. I was like, wait a minute, you're the bleep guy. And he goes, yes, I am. He was very happy about being the bleep guy. It was
that was
cool.
His claim to fame.
Yeah. And in fact, I have to mention, Eric Shiner has a connection through family to a person who helped out with the anniversary, 30th or 35th anniversary or something of the X-Files, this big convention And that guy, Pete, they invited him to the convention. They had Krycek there. They had Skinner there. They had the Smoking Man. They had the Lone Gunman were there. They had virtually everybody.
Oh, Krycek, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had it. Oh, I guess it was just a real success. Everybody loved it. They just had such a good time. And they're thinking about doing another convention in London. And I don't know. It looks like maybe David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson might be able to go to that one. So it could be kind of cool. So
Gard, were you ever up for X-Files? I never asked you that.
No, I visited the gate. So when I worked at Outer Limits, we were at these studios in Burnaby, just on the eastern edge of Vancouver proper, along this thing called the Lougheed Highway. And there was a restaurant called Earl's. Like anybody who's been there, and they know the intersection, because it's not even, there was like fields and stuff there too. It wasn't really that built up. It wasn't super built up, but it was like suburban as you're heading west to go to Vancouver. And then just a couple blocks in, you were in Vancouver. But so there was a really nice restaurant called Earl's. And then just south of that, which, you know, you just look beyond, you could see the studios and the sound stages and stuff rising up behind that. It wasn't super huge, but they had a number of sound stages there. And that was the Bridge Studios. And then If you went, just took a couple corners and you went over a bridge, you'd go over the inlet towards the mountains where Lynn Canyon was and stuff like that. A lot of beautiful mountains and skiing are up there. Right down there near the water's level was another studio, and that's where X-Files, where most of their sets were located. And then when they for their exteriors, they shot a lot up in this place called Lynn Canyon. And that's very interesting because Lynn Canyon, when I went up there, I used to go hiking up there. It wasn't really like hiking. I mean, they had trails and stuff. You just walk through the trails like around my house. And I guess they call it hiking. I just go and call it going in the woods, you know.
Just walking,
Yeah, you're just in the woods, right? So, but it was really cool because they had this little inlet where they had glacial water that came down this river. And it was this amazing emerald green. It was wild. It was like green jello. And it was the coldest water I've ever felt. Like I put my legs in it, and it was like steel fingers just wrapping around my legs. It was so wild. Wow. And it wasn't like I was going to go swimming, but I sat on a rock out there and I was like, whoa. And, but what was weird was they had cougar all over the place there. And, you had to carry a cowbell with you. You know, you felt like you were in Blue Oyster Cult carrying a cowbell around. Because you had to, like, not all the time, but when there was a cougar alert, you know, they're like, okay, well, if you want to go out there, you better bring the cowbell with you. And you'd like, bang the cowbell every once in a while to keep the cougars away. And,
that really would scare them off.
I don't know. Maybe it was like the mask for the pandemic, you know, pandemic.
Okay. Good point.
Yeah. I don't know, man, you know, but it was weird because you'd be walking around. And after that, by the time I finished at Outer Limits, and by that time, immediately I could tell. If I was watching a show, I was like, oh, that was shot in Vancouver. Like, I could tell because the houses had, the driveways have certain lips and there's certain design of the road, of the houses and stuff like that. And I'll give you another example. Here's a weird one. So, you know, two things. First, the end of Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah.
Genius. Okay, so first thing I'll tell you is, I think I'm going to mention to you, I found out, I always wanted to figure out where Ape City was located.
Yeah, yeah.
And I figured it out. Despite the fact that they shot Conquest of the Planet of the Apes and all those things out in Studio City, where they had built some stuff, and you could tell those buildings are there.
Yeah.
You couldn't really tell coming from the East Coast if you didn't know it. It was just this futuristic city, right?
Yeah.
So that was, and you know, the first movie, the ending, and spoilers for anybody, it ends in New York.
Yep.
Of course. So I used to try to backtrack because I was like, okay, they landed in a desert, you know, in a lake, and then they went north, northwest through the desert for X number of days. They had these provisions. So that would bring them up towards here. Yeah. And I found out it's Rod Serling's hometown of Binghamton. It's Binghamton, New York. That's where he made Ape City. And one of the fascinating things is, you know, in Planet of the Apes, when they find the waterfall, they discover water, and they're like, woo, and they jump in the water, right? And then the mute humans steal their clothes. There's a waterfall in Ithaca.
Wow.
And it's huge. It's just, you go a little west of Ithaca College, where Rod Serling taught, and you take a quick turn and you go up this little road, and it's the most amazing stone basin. The waterfall's got to be like 200 feet. It's just unbelievable. But I think that was the inspiration for that smaller waterfall that they shot where, you know, they go swimming.
Yeah, yeah.
And they find that water. So the whole area, that's Ape City. And what's curious, there are a couple things. In the remake movies that they did with Planet of the Apes, in the first movie, you'll notice that the character that James Franco plays is named Rodman. His last name is Rodman.
Yeah, yeah.
And his wife, his girlfriend is Caroline, right? Well, if you take the last three letters off of both of those names, you get Rod and Carol. Rod Serling's wife was named Carol.
Carol, yeah, and his yep. daughter and is Anne.
Yep, yeah. yep, and it's amazing people, amazing, amazing people. Jody befriended me over on Facebook. She's super nice. And so that was very interesting. And then the other thing about it is that when you look at the film Planet of the Apes, and I'm going to draw this into Tolkien in just a minute, but if you look at the film Planet of the Apes, you know, that ending is so iconic. But yeah. the only way it could have happened is if he was on the East Coast going north.
Right.
So they obviously, when they had their shootout with the apes, then he goes up because the sun is behind him as he's going, yeah. right?
Oh, yeah.
So then as he gets there, you see those spikes, and then they reverse angles, and you see what he's looking at.
Right.
The only way that they made that work was by shooting it at the appropriate time with the sunlight to make you understand that he had been traveling north, when in fact, on that beach,
yeah.
that beach has been used for a bunch of different things. They did Monkees episodes there. That beach, that cliff that is behind the statue, that you see where they did the matte painting of the statue, and there's a cliff behind the statue, and you look like you're looking north at the statue.
Yeah.
That cliff, actually, you're facing south, and you're on the west coast. So the director knew that this was the east coast, and he knew he had to shoot it in such a way that you wouldn't see the shadows, because the shadows would throw you off, and you're thinking, well, because, you know, the Statue of Liberty faces south. Right?
That's right, yeah.
Right. And there's a whole other story about Rod Serling's inspiration for that statue scene that I might have mentioned to you, which was a magazine cover of amazing stories
yeah.
from that month when he changed it from from a human graveyard to the statue.
Yeah.
And that there was a cover with a painting of the Statue of Liberty from Amazing Stories. A totally different science fiction story was featured in that magazine the month that he changed the script for Planet of the Apes in 1963.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so clearly he was inspired by that, and that's how he changed it. But the other thing I want to mention is, if you look at the Tolkien movies that Peter Jackson did.
Oh, yeah.
So you know all you know how amazing that was, and they shot it in New Zealand on the other side of the planet, right?
Yep.
So this is one of the things that I got, and the only reason I got it, like if you're talking about locations and stuff like that, like Vancouver and things like that, to draw back to X-Files and, you know, being able to tell it's Vancouver and stuff like right. that is. So when I went to Australia, I got all mixed up, because when you're looking at the sun here in the northern hemisphere, you're generally facing south.
Right.
So east is that way and west is that way. Right.
Yeah.
So that's south, west, east, north. Right. But in Australia, I was always backwards. Because when you're seeing the sun in Australia, that's north.
Right.
So east is that way and west is that way.
Yeah.
And it's really disorienting. Like, I would go running and I would kind of get lost. I'm like, wait. I would have to. Yeah, it was really weird.
Wow.
Well, if you watch, remember the Narnia films? They did those couple Narnia films, but the kids
yeah.
started to get too old. What's interesting is they shot those in New Zealand, too, in a lot of the same locations as the Tolkien films.
Oh.
And as you know, in the Narnia films, the witch is coming from the north, coming down.
Right.
Right? She's got the ice and all the stuff. She's coming from the north. Right? They didn't do it right. The shadows are wrong. The shadows are backwards. Yeah, right. The shadows, they had to, they should have flipped it. Anybody watches the movies, you can tell that they shot it in the Southern Hemisphere because it's not, they didn't think of where the shadows were going to be that right. The enemy was coming from the north.
Yeah, no, it's wild.
yeah, it's absolutely crazy when you think of these things and stuff. It's really fascinating. But anyway, oh, and just, Chris, just to let you know. So you know a ton about aliens, you know, the whole thing with aliens, Blade Runner, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you're probably aware, and I don't know if we spoke, I think we might have spoken about this, but so in the DVD or Blu-ray or something for, I think it's Aliens, they mentioned the Watani Corporation guy, right?
Oh,
Waylon Jean.
Yeah.
And there were two guys and stuff like that. Well, in the bio for Wayland, the Wayland Corporation, and he is later in Prometheus and stuff like that, right?
Yep.
That Wayland guy in the bio on the DVD, you probably know about this. Ridley Scott, or whoever was behind the DVD version of it, they were able to put into it that he was an apprentice to Tyrell. Of the Tyrell Corporation from Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And what's wild, I might have mentioned this to you, I think I called up the photo or something like that, but Kolchak has a story called Mr. Ring, R-I-N-G.
Yeah.
And it's about the series of murders of these military people out west, and they're all getting, like, just ripped to shreds. And so Kolchak investigates, and he discovers it's a robot. It's an android.
Right.
And the woman who programmed him started to give him ethics and philosophy, and he was getting confused because he was programmed to be a killing machine.
That's right.
And so he turns on the people who were making him a killing machine and starts to kill them.
Right.
And the place where they developed him, and you can see it as Kolchak pulls in with his yellow Mustang, is the Tyrell Institute.
That's right.
So I looked in it because I was like, well, maybe David Chase wrote that script. I don't think he did. Right. And I thought maybe David Chase was friends with the Peoples. You know, it was a husband and wife team who wrote most of the script for Blade Runner, I think.
Yeah, they would later on go on to replace Sam Hamm on Tim Burton's Batman 2 that became Batman Returns.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I think it was, they were Janet and something people.
Yeah.
Janet was the woman.
I think it was.
David people.
Yeah. And they did a bunch of TV work too. Yeah. And I think they were involved with, Blade Runner 2049, which is phenomenal. I think he was like a story advisor for it or something to keep the continuity.
They were a married screenwriting team for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Great, great stuff. So I just think it's so cool. You know, again, it's fantasy, it's escapism. I was talking with David about this, David Knight, about how, you know, as you start to look at it as a profession, you realize what's important in life is family and your associations with friends. All the rest of it passes. But there is something to the lessons that we can get out of these things. And I think looking at the efforts of some of these writers or the producers or even some of the really good actors who went out of their way.
We'll be back with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
It's obvious the unthinkable is happening. With all the recent media distractions, most folks never saw it coming. But a few did. Their guts told them something very wrong was going on. And now the headlines are proving them right. The people in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. Folks are investing in emergency food storage. And you should too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells biomass stoves, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, gravity-powered water filters, heirloom seeds, and survival gear that may come in handy soon. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
U.S. USA News update. President Biden is expressing his condolences for the victims of last month's mass shooting in Lewiston, Maine. Accompanied by the First Lady, he paid a visit to a memorial near the restaurant where that shooting happened.
This tragedy opens a painful wound all across the country. Too many Americans have lost loved ones or survived the trauma of gun violence.
Biden met with first responders, health care providers, and some of the families affected. Eric Trump providing testimony once more in his father's civil fraud trial in New York. The son of the former president currently addressing inquiries related to financial records of the Trump Organization. And Americans are preparing for the end of daylight saving time this weekend. Sunday clocks in most states across the U.S. will be set back 1 hour. While not everyone is pleased with the change, efforts to eliminate the time change through legislation have stalled in Congress. John Schaefer, USA News.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
We return with the final segment of Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks very much for listening, everybody, and thank you for your positive words after we joined you last week on Free Talk Live. We're going to join our guest, Chris Graves, in just a moment, and I want to let you know that this hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. BitRefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. What about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to Dash, D-A-O, for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash, Dash.org. And now our final segment for Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live with our guest known as the Mastodon of Research. You can find him on Rumble at Digging Chris Graves as we round up our conversation about mysteries
entertainment, legends, and lore. Whether it's a musician or it's a carpenter or whatever, you know, they really put their heart and soul into something. And that's what I get out of Darren McGavin's work for Night Stalker. Like, he was the pillar on that show, you know?
He's a great actor, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if I told you, we lived in Westport, Connecticut, and he lived there too, and I guess he knew my father. And, and my dad said that they were at a party one time, and he was very upset. He was not a fan of government, which you can tell from the Night Stalker.
Yeah.
And he was really upset because he had gone to do an expansion on his porch, and the zoning people wouldn't let him do it, or they were going to, like, punish him for having done it without permission or something. We had a similar thing in my
town. On his own property.
Yeah, on his own property. He's like, wow, you know, so it was pretty interesting. And Paul Newman and Linda Blair lived in Westport, too. And my sister and my brother were talking about Paul Newman's kids. I think my sister actually went to their house a couple times.
Yeah, Paul Newman had like a barn where people that would do work for his charity.
Yeah.
They'd usually get an invite to go and talk with Paul in his barn.
I remember
hearing about that.
Yeah, I guess he was a super nice guy. They just said he was a really
by all
good
accounts,
guy.
Yeah. Great
yeah,
actor.
Yeah. Oh, man. I wish I could have been on the racing teams, you know, working on those engines and stuff. That would have been fun. But look, man, I know it's 9 o'clock. We've been rolling, and you've been around for a long time, dude. And I know you got so many things. You probably haven't even eaten dinner yet. Let me get your favorite candy, man. What was the favorite candy?
Candy corn. Can't go wrong.
Candy corn. Can't go wrong. Would you put it on ice cream, too? Would that be a good combo sometimes?
You know what? I never thought to do that, but I wouldn't throw it away.
Oh, so, so good. So good. And scariest movie for you? Jaws?
Well, I'd probably say probably the Joy Luck Club. or Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit.
Well, for me, I saw Jaws, I think I was 11, and it
Jaws is up
out.
There. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. And Duel on TV.
Oh,
original.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Trilogy. You mentioned Trilogy. Trilogy of Terror was king, god, epic, super scary.
I'll tell you this, Gard. The one that turned my life around, and I'd say for the better in terms of wanting to be a filmmaker or a storyteller or even an actor, was Wes Craven's A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I have to see that. I really, and you mentioned that it's got all these depth and levels to it that
it's got all kinds of subtext, and it's just a good spooky campfire story at its heart. You know, a guy that can get you in your dreams, everyone, like the ocean guard, like in Jaws.
Yeah,
everyone's got to sleep. So it's a universal concept. Wes Craven was onto something there.
Oh, man. And, you know, I'll mention again, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978. Oh, yeah. The first was great, too.
Yeah.
And that later one that they did on the Army base, that was good, too. That was a good one.
There's a few iterations of that, yeah.
Yeah, they did four, and then the last one was the woman, the Aussie girl, whose father was, like, involved with some weird stuff. What's her name? She's married to the rocker and was formerly married to Tom.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, I didn't watch that one. And then Wicker Man I enjoyed.
1973.
And did you ever hear the story Christopher Lee mentioned that there's a bunch of Wicker Man stuff that got lost and it's probably under one of the M4 or M3s or something like that?
I have heard that, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing stuff. And, of course, so many of the Hammer horror films, the Quatermass films, amazing stories.
Oh, you're talking about Alan Quatermass?
Oh, so good. Quarterman or whatever from the Quarterman. H. Haggard, Alan Quatermain.
I'm getting it all mixed up.
But no, these were the Quatermass stories. They had Quatermass in the Pit, Quatermass Experiment, and another one, and they were Hammer, and they were super cool. They were really, really cool. Nigel Neal was the writer, and if you're familiar with the BBC version of 1984 with Peter Cushing, that's available free on YouTube.
Yeah.
Nigel Neal was, I think, the writer. I don't know if he directed that, but he was the script writer for that adaptation of 1984. Very good adaptation.
Nigel Neal and John Carpenter, the filmmaker John Carpenter, had like this huge like brawl because John Carpenter being the executive producer of Halloween 3,
yeah,
actually contracted Nigel to write the screenplay because John and Deborah Hill, they both didn't want to write the third one because they had written the first two.
Yeah,
and there was this like kind of. Maybe not legendary because only fanatics like myself really know about it, but they had like this huge, like Nigel apparently was a very, well, by what John Carpenter says, was kind of a grumpy individual.
Interesting.
For the most part, but, I love both their work. So it's weird seeing those forces collide, you know?
Oh man, I gotta go back, you know, I have not taken a lot of time. I just started watching, another rerun from Hawaii 5-0. And there's another show where Jack Lord ended up shouldering the last few years of that show just basically on his own, keeping it going. And what a great job he did, you know? I mean, some of these people, they just, the work that they would do and the exactitude. You look at Tom Baker from Doctor Who. He knew every nuance of the scripts, and he was very, very exacting on the shows that, you know, the doctor would only do this or only do that. And, you know, ever since then, the actors are like, well, yeah, he was right. He was absolutely right. Philip Hinchcliffe and those writers, Terry Nation, Terrence Dix, Robert Holmes, they were just, you know, the golden age. Barry Letts during John Pertwee's era and John Pertwee, you know, amazing, amazing people all involved in that era of Doctor Who. Great stuff.
You know who loved Jack Lord? The late singer for Alice in Chains, Lane Staley.
Really?
He liked him because, you know, when the musicians would choose like a name for the publishing and everything?
Yeah.
Usually you'd see it in the liner notes. Well, Lane Staley and Jerry Cantrell, for the most part, would write most of Alice in Chains' music together, or sometimes Jerry would write more of the musical stuff, but every time I would see Lane Staley's publishing company name, like in the liner notes, it was Jack Lord Music. I always got a kick out of that.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it is weird because...
Yeah.
You know, these people receive so much of our attention, and it is weird. You know, the guy who's out there, you know, raising turkeys for Thanksgiving might get some, you know, local familiarity with people and stuff like that. So I try to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
But there's something very enthralling and exciting and fun about these stories, especially if the stories pack a surprise. They entertain you and they can give you value, you know.
It's Twilight Zone right there. Yeah. Ahead of the time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Chris, thank you. Okay, Tom is in the house. He says, thanks, Gard and Chris, for the cool show. God bless. Stay safe out there and enjoy the rest of your night. Brian Deb says, watched Wicker Man. Yeah, the original is very cool. And final thing, did you get to see Nicolas Cage's version of Colorado?
I was going to say, yeah, and James.
Not Wicker Man, though.
Oh,
not
Wicker Man.
Okay. Yeah, I know people. Oh, the bees!
I saw that one. Yeah,
I haven't seen it, but he did a version of Color Out of Space.
That I thought would make for a great motion picture a while ago, and they went and made it. And I still need to check it out. I think it was released during the pandemic, so it wasn't in theaters, but. Some trusted friends of mine, they weren't too enthused by it, but I don't know what to make of that.
I'll say this. If you listen to Tales to Terrify, if you go to Tales to Terrify, just look up Color Out of Space, Tales to Terrify.
Okay.
There was the host of Tales to Terrify, Tony was his name. He passed away. He did a version, just reading the story.
And
it is superb.
Well, for those out there that are not familiar with what Gard's talking about, it's a great, one of H.P. Lovecraft's greatest stories, in my opinion. And the concept is something that I've been fascinated with for, forever. The idea of what would happen if all of a sudden you saw a brand new color and your eye could actually see it. And what would that do? And could it be extraterrestrial in nature?
Right.
Not to give anything away, but could it be out of this world, so to speak?
Yeah.
Am I giving you justice with that?
Oh yeah, it's great, and it's a color you can't describe. You know, in that Lovecraftian, you know, Cthulhu-esque sort of thing.
That's right.
And you nailed it. You nailed it. And what's really interesting is, okay, so you know how Lovecraft? We're coming right back to Salem.
Yeah,
Lovecraft's Arkham.
Danvers Hospital, the state hospital, was
And Arkham is loosely based on Salem in that area, Peabody, Salem, but mostly Salem.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is, as you know, Arkham is the only place where the Marvel and DC universes cross.
Okay, now you're telling me something that I don't know at all, and you're blowing my mind right now, because I just know it as the number one place for all of my favorite heroes, villains, Batman, Arkham Asylum. Now, Marvel...
Marvel has an Arkham Asylum. They both have Arkham Asylum. That's where there's a crossover.
Really?
They both have an Arkham Asylum. And in fact, Cletus Cassidy is, I believe that's where Cletus gets,
Carnage? You're talking about Carnage. Cletus Cassidy?
Yeah, Carnage, exactly.
Okay.
That's where Cletus Cassidy, I believe it's, he becomes infected by the symbiote.
Venom.
Yeah, because what's his name who is Venom?
Eddie
is
Brock.
In there. Yeah. So he's put in there for a little while, and he's in a cell, like, next to Cletus Cassidy, who's a much crazier homicidal. And there, it's in Arkham Asylum.
That is Arkham Marvel. Yeah. I gotta turn in my geek card, because I've never heard of Marvel. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I've never heard them. The Marvel universe. Arkham.
Yeah. In fact, I think, I don't know if it's when they created Carnage, but it's close to it.
Right.
There's a Marvel graphic novel that combines most of those issues where. They have
like an omnibus kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's like an oversized paperback, and it's great. And it happened in the 90s, just around the time that Siamese Dream was released by Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah.
And in the blocks, Cletus Cassidy is screaming, "Let me out! Let me out!" And they do it. Let me out! And it goes, and you're like, oh man, this has got to be a reference to Smashing Pumpkins. It's got to be, right?
And they would be on the Batman and Robin soundtrack.
Yeah. It's super cool. So, but what's interesting is bringing back to Colorado Space.
Yeah.
The main character in Colorado Space, his last name is Gardner.
Oh.
So, yeah, Lovecraft knew enough to know that the Gardner family was very, you know, he might not have known that they helped found Salem, but he knew that the Gardner family was very big in Salem. So Lovecraft used the Gardner last name as the main character for the family that owns the farm that gets this color on it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So check it out. If you get a chance, I'll see if I can find the link for you, Chris.
Yeah.
I'll post it on Twitter, too, for the audience. It's a fantastic reading. And by the way, the reading done by this former host of Santoro was his name. He passed away from cancer. But Tales to Terrified, they got tons of great stories. Joe Lansdale, God of the Razor, is in there.
Oh, I interviewed him, too.
Yes, that was a fantastic. Joe's a friend of mine. He's such a good guy.
Yeah,
he's a good dude.
His daughter is very talented too.
Oh yeah, amazing. And she's a great country singer. And
I derailed. We're all over the place.
No. But yeah. So it's very interesting, because let me see if I can call up the Tales to Terrify website.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can call it up for you. And there's one other thing. There's a story called Triumph by a guy who came over from Croatia.
Yeah.
His name is Damir Salkovic. And it's like an alternate World War II history thing of the Nazis and their weird occult searches for talismans and stuff.
Oh, like the Vril Society?
Yeah. The total Vril stuff. Wow. Exactly.
Yeah.
And yep. Like that stuff that Sapir wrote about. And so here's the Tales to Terrify website. And
that's
they've
cool.
got all sorts of stuff in there. I mean, just amazing stories. So good. And if you do a search for Damir, I'll post that one on Twitter too. But if you do a search, it's Tony Santoro was his name. He passed away. But what's curious about it, Chris, again, bringing it back home.
Yeah.
Santoro, who was the original host of Tales of Terrifying, I found out that he was living out somewhere in like the Midwest or whatever when he was doing the show, or maybe in Connecticut or something. I can't remember. Not the same thing, but I found out that he actually lived where I went to high school in Milford, New Hampshire, and was the director of numerous plays at a place called the American Stage Festival, where during the summertime, it was a summer stock theater thing. Yeah. A lot of the New York Broadway and off-Broadway actors would come up to do summer stock there. I saw Gaslight there, and I think he directed it when I was a kid.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
It is, yeah. Small world.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck, man? Like I contacted him because I wanted to get in touch with Dalmir Salkovic, and he wrote back. He was so nice. Yeah. He contacted Dalmir. Dalmir contacted me, sent me a PDF of the story, and he's like, oh, I see on your thing you're in Amherst, New Hampshire. I worked at the American Stage Festival in Milford. I was a director there. I'm like, whoa, man.
Wow.
It was, yeah, super, super cool. So anyway, yeah, I'll send you the links, dude.
Okay.
And thank you. Oh, and we have some donations over at Rockfin. So I want to just get in there because I probably missed a bunch of things. And we got to start doing this on YouTube, man. Yeah. Audi Tip 20 says, cops are low IQ order followers who scoff at the Constitution, from earlier in the program.
Yep.
From Ian Freeman to his to this mystic shop owner. Yes, Audi. Bang on, man. Yeah. Andromeda 1. Oh, there's a great movie, The Andromeda Strain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Man, that's so intense at the end. I saw The Cult Saturday night at the Palms Hotel here in Vegas. They rocked. Dude, I hope they did The Witch. Dude, yes.
I only saw them once, and it was at River Rave at Foxborough Stadium in like 2002 or something.
I hope it was good.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, they're good, man. And that whole thing, Ian Astbury connecting with the Native American influence when he was in school, because he felt like an outcast because he came from England. He had the accent in Canada, so he was sort of pushed away. He became friends with a lot of the Indian kids. That's way cool. That's so cool. MJ Nichols, MJ, thanks for putting the show together tonight, Guard, and for getting CG back on. Can't think of better Halloween mind meld. Yes. Patrick S. tipped, I like chicken. And then there's Max B. Did Bizarro Guard did we send Bizarro Guard on a candy run? Yeah, he'll have to come back. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
And Real McCoy's sent a tip as well. You guys are all amazing. And so final thoughts on the Rockfin chat, for final thoughts on candy and stuff like that. And then, Chris, I better let you go. Also at Rumble, same thing. We get Risha M saying, awesome show. Thanks, Chris. That was awesome. Chris Graves, everybody, get over to Rumble. Hit that like. Hit the follow. Spread the shows that are out there, especially that Jack the Ripper show. And by the way, talking about Jack, Jack the podcaster
Jack Allen. He had a
Jack
child.
Allen. God bless Jack Allen and his wife. Their baby is doing great, I hear.
Yeah.
And he just did a pod about a book that he read about Aleister Crowley. It was fascinating.
He did. I was watching some of that. Yeah, no, I've had him on Digging for a couple of times, and he was gracious enough to have me on Kojak. That's initials for a conspiracy or just a coincidence.
Yes, I remember that. It was amazing. You guys, we got to do more of this. This is so good. Northern Cardinals says goodnight to some people. Spooktacular show, boys. Thanks for being our guest tonight, Chris Ghostly Graves.
I just wish my camera was working.
Chris, I got to tell you, you've been going through so much stuff.
Yeah.
And don't ever, ever forget the power that you represent. And I know when you're by yourself and you don't feel good. And saying this publicly is important, I think, for a number of other people. You're showing great power, and thanks, man, because you've done great stuff for people you never even are going to meet. So kudos, man. And we're going to continue our Tales to Terrify in the future. And you're going to be in an anthology that Liberty Conspiracy Publishing puts out. I know.
Oh, thank you.
You got it. Oh, dude, it's going to be great. So, all right, folks, we're going to say farewell. Chris Graves is going to check out. Chris, final thoughts. Where can they find your stuff? I'll start calling things up on the web here.
Well, I'll make it nice and short. I did a Rumble page that Guard was nice enough to put up on the screen. That's under the page Digging Chris Graves. That has the show with Peter as well, which is Don't Take Our Word for It, which we're gonna have. I'm not sure you're familiar with an author by the name of Joseph Farrell. Have you ever heard of Joseph Farrell? He does a bunch of work on like 9/11 and JFK and pyramids.
I think that's maybe where I've heard. I don't know him.
Yeah, he's been on I Protest with Donald recently.
Oh yeah. Okay, right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So him and Peter are pretty tight when it comes to researching stuff back and forth. So I'd like to talk to him on our Don't Take Our Word for It show about some of his 9/11 work that he's done. But other than that, I'm just actually, the moment I part ways with you, Guard, I'm going to have Franco Mattei, our good friend, and Mr. Jason Barker. If I can get this camera to work, we're going to try to do another test live stream of my StreamYard.
Oh, nice.
So we're going to do that, and that'll go right to that Digging Chris Graves Rumble page. Hopefully I set it up right, and okay, to my Twitter feed. And Twitter feed, I guess, is the most important. And you have it right there. Thank you, sir. Okay.
There you go, so, man.
Yeah, yep. That's it. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so, and people can start watching that then. Will it go out, or will it be private? It'll go out?
Oh, it'll go live. Okay. Everything will be live stream from here on.
All right.
I have all of the content I was able to save or back up. I've been uploading to this page on Rumble. So
you are the Rumble Fish right there, man.
Rumble Fish, Francis Ford Coppola, 1983,
82. Yeah, man. Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Chris, thank you. I've kept you so much longer than I ever anticipated.
I love the heck out of this, man.
I love you, man. You're just the man.
I love you too, brother.
Yeah, you're awesome. So, good vibes. Lots of prayers for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. While I put on my dinner, I'll be checking things out. I hope people go to your Twitter handle is at CGravesMaskGuy.
Yes.
At C. Graves Mask Guy for people listening after the fact. And if you're listening later on the Free Talk Live broadcast on Friday.
Yeah.
And also, we've got your Rumble is Digging Chris Graves, right?
Yeah, that's the official channel. Yeah, I'm not sure why the link has it as the weird numbers and all that. I don't know, but it's Digging Chris Graves. You just type it in there.
All right, buddy. Thanks for listening to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Have you heard the warning from the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100. and have a great time getting there.